Hey yo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast. Happy to be on the air and in your ear, but I am even happier to announce that we have an extra special guest. This man played guitar with Alice Cooper for a couple of albums. He went solo and then he took a little bit of time off. He is back, and he is back with an album that is so amazing. I am super excited to talk about it. This man is Kane Roberts. Kane, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Nice to talk to you, Brent. And you know, I'm glad you like the record. That was kind of a nice intro there, so that's hot.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I've gone through and listened to all of your work, and I really believe that this is your best album. More so just because I think that you're really taking chances and you're really willing to kind of, you know, step out there beyond what most people would have considered your comfort zone.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the way I entered the whole thing. You know, I've been off the grid for a while. So, you know, walking into the studio, I had a real recording studio. I got out of, speaking of comfort zones, you know, I left my house. I don't want to be looking at things that I look at all the time. I get this big-ass couch in the living room. You know, I'd be hitting that thing all the time between solos and stuff. And I really don't play my best guitar in my underwear. I wish I did because I'd wear that on stage. But anyway, so I go to the studio, and, you know, it was kind of like walking into a room with no lights. I mean, you just assume that there's floor in front of you and you take the next step. Because, you know, I'd step in front of the microphone. Is my voice going to sound good? Am I going to be able to handle all this stuff? You know, because the standard, you know, once you get in the studio and you're going to put stuff out for people to hear, has got to be about as high as you can possibly get it, you know. And so, you know, I'm excited to have gotten the chance to record. You know, Frontiers gave me the opportunity. So, you know, now here I am 3 years later. It took me 3 years to record it. And now I'm on your show and, you know, honored to be here. So it's been a good 3 year process.
Well, yeah, that's great. And I mean, we're so happy to have you on the show. And honestly, I mean, yeah, if every album took 3 years for it to come out this good, then I would just say, like, hey, every album should take 3 years. Because,
yeah,
I mean, it's one of those cases with all the people that you've got on. You managed to get amazing talent. I mean, just the fact that you managed to reunite your Alice Cooper bandmates on one song, which is a great song above and beyond. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think about it, the musicians that I chose there are still, you know, they still have the fire. They're still very prolific. I mean, Kip Winger's got his solo thing he does. He's got his band Winger still. He's got a Grammy nomination for classical music. I mean, the guy's head is like right into the right zone for somebody who's doing kind of amazing stuff. He didn't slow down at all. And it's the same thing with Ken Mary. I mean, he's in Flotsam and Jetsam now, and that is not what you'd call a comfortable ride. I mean, that music is tough, it's fast, and it really is demanding on the drums, and he's totally killing it. So, you know, that's the real reason I chose them to be involved in a couple of the songs that I did, just because they raised the standard so high, you know, and some of the other guests as well. They're just people that they're breathing rare air, you know what I mean? So that can only help me, you know, get my head out of the abyss that I've been hiding in for the last 10 years or 20 years.
Yeah, I know. It seems so amazing because you were such a, you know, I just remember seeing so much of you back in those days. I mean, your image was larger than life. I mean, and of course, you yourself larger than so many people in that way. But
yeah, larger than a lot of people too, yeah.
But, you know, it's like your image was so amazing. Like, do you think that your image overshadowed the music?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a big aspect of that. I mean, I remember I played a show at, I think it was Wembley in England, and I read an article the next day, and they said that I wasn't playing guitar, that they could tell that somebody was playing guitar backstage. And I was thinking, you know, really? Seriously? Like, the only reason they thought that is because, you know, I weighed 230 pounds, you know, or something. Like, my look wasn't sort of what they would expect a guitar player, you know, to look like. But, you know, it was fine. I mean, I was just obsessed with you know, lifting weights and getting big and all that stuff. I mean, that's just who I was. And, you know, the Rambo thing, believe it or not, you know, even with the gun guitar, Shooting Flame, you know, you think that, you know, a bell would go off of my head. The first time I read my name, Kane Rambo Roberts, I was like, what the fuck is that? What are you talking about? I actually didn't notice, you know what I mean? I started looking at photos of myself going like, geez, you know, all I needed was a headband, you know, and a real machine gun, you know, so... So yeah, I mean, the imagery thing is always something that you know, can influence how people view you and whether they judge you or whether, you know, you piss them off or whether they like you, whatever it is. You know, it's just who I was. It's who I am today. You know, whatever it is I'm doing. So, you know, that's just the way I operate.
Yeah, because I mean, one of the things that I think you really notice as you start going through your work is that your guitar playing is excellent, and I think you've really matured as a guitarist as well.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Like, you know, yes, I did walk away from the music industry because, you know, the business part of it, I didn't think was something that, you know, didn't appeal to me anymore. You know, I mean, culture was changing, you know, tastes were changing, whatever it is. But it's just the whole thing about, even like, you know, dealing with club owners and all that stuff, I just was kind of at the point where, you know, I wanted to step off that part. The music, the fans, they meant, you know, everything to me still, I mean, to this day. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I spent so much time trying to get this record to offer something more, to do things unexpected that they would normally see, and, you know, bring in some artists like Alice Cooper and Alyssa White Glues from Arch Enemy, you know, to do the unexpected like that. It's one of the reasons why. But, I mean, I never stopped playing guitar. And, you know, as an artist, I still listen to tons of music, and, you know, my favorite guitar player is Zakk Wylde and Steve Vai and people like that. But, you know, I'm also listening to bands, you know, new bands like Battle Beast and Volbeat and Ghost and Lacuna Coil. I mean, there's a lot of music out there that's great music out there. So I think if my playing sounds a little different, it's because I kept playing, and also I allow influences to come into my life.
Yeah, I think it's great when you can allow the influences to come in an organic fashion, because, you know, music, I mean, it's the interesting thing about fans. I think that, you know, I'll class myself as one of them, and for sure, you know, we want you to sound the same, but at the same time, we want you to evolve. So it must be
right.
A very hard line to kind of walk.
Well, you know, it's the thing is, you know, it's an interesting point, because on every level of the recording process, of the creative process, of actually like presenting something, even playing live, is that you have to take your thought process out of the moment that you're in. So you don't want to be thinking sentences. You just want to have the natural flow of things. So, I mean, I can't sit there and go, oh, you know what, I want to do a different kind of a solo, or I don't want to sound like the 80s, or I want to sound, you know, modern. Or, you can't do that and really come up with something what I believe is legit. You might come up with something that sounds good, but it's not going to really represent, you know, who you are as an artist. So, you know, the environment that I was in with my co-producer, Alex Tratt, was totally one of, like, you know, let's just surprise ourselves all the time, you know, and play a new voicing on the guitar. You know, don't put a guitar solo, put it at the end of the song. You know, one of the times, one of the songs, Leave This World Behind, I take the rhythm section out and just have this sort of percussion band underneath me doing this, like, kind of a shred solo that I did. So, you know, on every level, as long as you're allowing sort of, as you call it, an organic process or a natural evolution to take place, and you're not, you know, the discipline part, when you practice and you do scales, and yeah, that's very thought out. There's a lot going on there in terms of technical stuff. But when you're actually, like, trying to create, you've got to kind of hope that the backlog of experiences that you have are the things that push you forward, as opposed to, like, sitting there going, you know, I want to do something that sounds like this guy or whatever, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a natural process when it's at its best.
Yeah, yeah. So, on the Saints and Sinners album especially, like, you wrote with Desmond Child and Diane Warren. I mean, these are amazing songwriters that, you know.
Yeah.
What kind of things did you learn from working with them?
I think the main thing is... you get the work done. In other words, and there were days like this where I would be in Hollywood and, you know, I'm supposed to write with Desmond at, let's say, 4 p.m. And Desmond goes, you know what, I have to get on a plane and go to whatever come on by, but we can only work for 15 minutes. Well, I would go over there, and at the end of that 15 minutes, we would have a song. In other words, we would have a beginning, you know, a middle, and a chorus, you know, whatever it is. You know, a lot of times I'd write with people, we'd sit there for 2 hours, we'd get a little bit of a verse, and then he'd go out and go get a sandwich or something like that. But this, but the, their whole process was, this is their job, this is what they do, and in order to be sort of prolific, in order to create, you have to have a certain standard that you work in. So Desmond's thing was, however minutes that you're here with me, we're going to come up with something that you can go home with and work for our next writing session, that sort of a thing. Very dominant personalities. Another guy that was like that was Paul Stanley. You know, he was all about the work. When we were sitting there with the guitar, we were writing that song, Take It Off, for the Revenge album, you know, he was into getting the work done and creating and not just hanging out. There's no hanging out aspect to any of it. So I think that's one of the main things I learned, you know, is when you it's time to get real, you shut everything else out, you put everything else out the door and shut it, and then just, you know, get to work.
Yeah. I mean, it's really fascinating to think about the psychology behind a lot of the great songwriters and how they are able to kind of, you know, be so prolific in their output.
Yeah, and you know, they have their standard default stuff that they do, but it's mostly just there for that moment. In other words, they'll take it into another level later, you know, like, in other words, if you have a structure of a song and, you know, somebody goes, you know, Desmond would say something and my heart's on fire, I knew that line wasn't going to last. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He'd come up with something different later to sort of upgrade that moment of the song. And that, you know, a lot of the lyrics on the new album sort of deal with things in a much more personal way for me, in a much more current way, where it's not always black and white. It's not always the girl I fell in love with, she broke my heart, and now she sucks. You know, that's not the premise of any of the songs that are on the new album. They're all like sort of based on what I think is a more, for lack of a better word, modern way of looking at things, you know, in terms of the theme. And it's also, you know, more me. It's more conversational. It's more like you're actually sitting there in front of me and we're dealing with each other.
Yeah, for sure. Because there's, you know, it's like, it's such a trope of the 80s and when you were really came to fruition with Alice, you know, of the whole baby, baby, baby lyric thing, that it's nice to see that whole thing kind of gone, but you can still get a good melody with, you know, stronger, more powerful emotional lyrics.
Well, you know, and think of how lucky I am, because, you know, there's a couple of things, you know, like, number one, with the way I look, I challenge you to tell me any other band on the face of the earth that I could have joined other than Alice. That was it. Who else? Yeah, White Lion, you know, featuring, you know, 230 pounds. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. You know, that was number one. And number two, his lyrics are just different. You know, I would sit there sometimes. There was a song we did off the Raise Your Fist and Yell album called Prince of Darkness. And he wrote those lyrics literally in 15, 20 minutes, just sitting there eating Fritos or something, you know. And it's just phenomenal writing. The flow is insane. And you know, I was lucky, you know, those words are really intelligent, and you just sound like you're sitting, it feels like you're sitting in front of Alice, you know, when he performs this stuff, and he's dealing with you directly, you know. And that's one of the reasons I got him on a new record, because, you know, we have a song called Beginning of the End, excuse me, and I sang a rough vocal. And then I just sat there and I was listening to the playback and I said, nobody could deliver these lines better than Alice Cooper right now. And I wanted him on the record, you know, not to just sing one line or just say something at the beginning of a song. I wanted to do a duet with him. And, you know, he was, you know, we're really great friends. I mean, he knows he can trust me on every single level. So, but I was just really kind of honored and blessed that he just said, yeah, I'll be right over. And he came over and sang the song. So.
Now, one of the things, and I mean, maybe you can speak to this a little bit, with Alice Cooper is the fact that that so few people out there are able to find the quality of talent that he has been able to find throughout his career. And not only that, to find it from seemingly nowhere.
Well, it's a lot of that has to do with, there's a number of things. First of all, the organization itself has this insane balance. You know, they go on instinct, you know. And I would say, you know, 99 times out of 100, they're right. You know, Shep Gordon, his manager, is one of those guys. And I was lucky to have him manage me, you know, when I was with Alice, you know, a couple of records after. And, you know, Bob Ezrin has got a tremendous ear for what he thinks can actually fit in to the Alice Cooper, you know, mentality. And so, you know, when I think, you know, with Orianti, he's gone, and the other guys in the band, by the way, everybody talks about, you know, the guitar players, but, you know, the rest of the band is just, you know, phenomenal.
Chuck Garrick is one of my favorite players. Yeah.
Who's that?
Chuck Garrick.
And he's, you know, and by the way, they're all just really stunningly great people at the same time. They're just really nice. And, you know, and Nita, you know, what an absolute shock and surprise just how good she is. You know, I saw her play, and, you know, I was just, you know, stunned. And, you know, and I said, this is so fantastic. I had known of her before when she was with the Iron Maiden, so I knew she could play. But, you know, so I called her up, you know, when I wanted to trade solos on the song King of the World. I wanted to go back and forth with somebody. And, you know, you hear her just come roaring in at the beginning of the solo trade-off, and it's just, you know, great, because I just knew that the standard was, like, way up there. I had to come back with some good shit. You know what I mean? So it's just, you're right. They find great people. But I think, you know, with Alice's instincts, the way Shep Gordon views the entire Alice Cooper universe, and then Bob Ezrin's just ears, I mean, the guy's just, he's just really, like, he's like a surgeon when it comes to, like, finding the right stuff. He knows, you know, the right places to cut into. So I think it's a kind of a combination of things.
So let's talk about your voice a little bit. You know, I think your singing is really good in this. Like, how has your singing improved? And did the time off kind of help or hinder that?
You know, somebody said that to me. Somebody said, geez, your voice sounds like, you know, fresh. It sounds like totally awesome. And you know, and I said, maybe it's because I haven't been singing live for, you know, the last years, you know, whatever. So I'm not sure what it was. I know that my phrasing and the way I'm looking at words and pronouncing them and singing and approaching things, it has to do with all the music that I've been listening to, you know, since, you know, I kind of, you know, stepped off the grid, so to speak. So, you know, there's one song called Who We Are. It's kind of an acoustic ballad. And, you know, the middle section's got this incredible young artist named Kat Franich who sings back at me. She does this amazing part in the middle. And you can see, like, you know, the styles, you know, match, you know. And it's because I've been listening to so much stuff, and my voice, my sort of my style, or the way I approach songs and articulating the melodies and everything has evolved over the years. And I just, you know, as every month went by, my voice got stronger and stronger, and the producer and I were just really happy that, you know, nothing had gone away. I still had, you know, the range and everything, so I was kind of fortunate.
Are you planning on doing a lot of touring for the album?
At this point, no. What I'm doing is mostly just videos. I want to do 4 or 5 videos off the record. You know, I do work a lot with motion graphics and stuff. And when I was a kid, you know, soundtracks and you know, stuff that just, you know, juiced up a visual, you know, like in a movie or whatever. I thought the same thing, especially with, you know, music videos and everything, and the fact that YouTube is now such a viable force. It's still, you know, MTV went away, but, you know, the whole thing with, you know, audio visual being put together to create an overall experience survived, you know. It's almost like an organic entity. It wasn't going to go away. So I think that's the main thing. I'll get a better reach in terms of, you know, finding more people's eyes and ears to hear what I'm doing. And then, you know, the other thing is, if it seems, you know, viable, if the record has enough sort of impact or whatever, and live shows make sense, then I'll do it. But, you know, at this point, I really don't have any plans.
Yeah, well, and I guess that's always one of those things that that I look at when I see an album that does have a lot of guests on it is like, how do you like tour on that? Obviously, you can't bring all those people with you every time out, though that would be awesome.
Yeah, I would have Alice and Alyssa White Glues from Enemy play on every show that I did. No, it's not going to happen. I wanted to make this album, I wanted to give it kind of a cinematic feel. I wanted to have everybody knew that every song that came by, there was something unexpected. You know, when I thought of having Alyssa with Alice and I and have her drop in the middle of the song and just blow the whole thing up, I just felt so honored that Alyssa agreed to do it. She heard the song and said she'll definitely do it. And then, my final effort, the final miracle that I pulled off was to have Alice and Alyssa and I at the same location and shoot a video for the song. So I'm editing that now. It's going to be done in a few days.
Yeah, I saw the pictures on Facebook. That looks super cool. I am eagerly anticipating that. I got to say, I think that was the moment, I was enjoying the album, but I think it was that moment where it just crunches in with her vocals and I'm just like, oh no, I'm sold. I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah, and her video performance, everything. The thing about Alyssa is, she made great efforts to be involved with this. Not because I'm so special. I mean, I'm sure she was very, attracted to doing something with Alice or whatever. But she's the type of artist that if she commits to something, she puts every fiber of herself into it. And it's a very natural thing, we talk about, how much you commit to something and how, the creative process and everything. She really sort of exemplifies that. She's the paradigm for that, today. And then, never mind all the norms that she's blowing apart, every time she opens her mouth. So, and her singing, like she does some really, not just growls, she does this beautiful vocal right after she growls. So it was that sort of contrast, too, that gave the song, another, dimension to it. And then, when I was talking about guitar solos, my solo on that song is at the end, mm-hmm. and rather than keep the structures all the same, I wasn't even going to do a guitar solo, but then I thought to myself, it might be kind of a cool thing to just sort of, speak, with the guitar at the end of the song. So.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. What's the difference between writing for the movies and writing for an album?
Writing for a movie is almost like you have the concept of the song presented to you before you start to write. In other words, sometimes when you're writing, I'll be in the car and I'll just start singing a melody, and then the feeling will start to emerge, and then the atmosphere, I'm feeling it inside, and then it's sort of it's sort of the guiding light with how the lyrics are going to go, whether the song sucks or it's great or whatever. That's the way it is. But if you're writing for, let's say, a scene in a movie, I have a friend that works with Hans Zimmer. I don't know if you remember the movie, The Ring, but there's a scene in it where this horse jumps off this big ship and it jumps into the ocean. A very, very poignant scene. And so, his job is to write the score underneath it. Well, so he has that visual. He has that whole feel of the story in the film already. And so he's starting from a certain point. So he can make a decision to do something completely atypical to that. Maybe have a nursery rhyme, or maybe have it, just whatever it's going to be. So it's not easier, but, you're starting with a tremendous amount of information, when you're writing. Right at the beginning of it, you have an entire push or story or momentum, before you start. The other thing too is when you get called to write with somebody, like I got a call to write with Paul Stanley. So, I drove up to his place and I'm sitting there with Ezra, and, that's kind of like a completely open field, but, you want to, you're sort of subject to whatever the sort of, width or the how deep this artist is and what they can accept. Paul happens to be somebody who's just he's a phenomenal artist. So, I started playing and right away, I started writing, so it was one of those things. So it just depends, every scenario is a little bit different.
Yeah. So on your Twitter account, it says you were born, you read a comic, and you watched a video. What comic did you read?
I think it was Spider-Man. I was a Marvel kid, So, and then I saw, you know, as time went on, I started drawing, you know, all the characters. Yeah, I don't know if you remember these guys, but there was an artist named Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko and all those guys. Yeah, I was more into the art and just the storyline, the fact that the characters in Marvel, you know, all had problems, you know, they all had issues, like real issues. So, you know, I ended up being a Marvel kid, and then I sort of graduated into, like, you know, graphic novels like The Walking Dead and 100 Bullets and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. And anything Frank Miller touched kind of blew my mind. So, you know, I've always been, had this sort of, you know, visual addiction, so to speak, you know. So, those were my comics.
I love Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. That's a personal favorite.
Oh, you do? You're the only guy I know that knows about that. I mean, the camera angles, you know, he'll have like that, a little doll on a table, and the camera's behind the doll, and the doll's in profile, and Johnny's at the door with this, like, you know, light coming down from below, coming up from below. So, pretty awesome.
And it still has the greatest line I've ever read in a comic book. Somebody put shit in my pants.
That's funny.
It's
great.
Yeah, it's sick and twisted and perfectly great. I know I'm running out of time here. The album cover is amazing. First, that's really impressive. So I think that's very striking.
That's Michael Rosner is the photographer and artist and everything. And Brierly is the model. She's absolutely fantastic. She's super hot. She's like, you know, she's got the attitude. You know, basically what you're going to see on her face is just her eyes. And there's so much story in that look that she gives at the camera. You know, just really into it.
Well, I know this is the time of the show where I give you the opportunity to plug your shit. I mean, you got your new normal coming out on January 25th from Frontiers. I'll let you tell the folks where to find it.
Yeah, well, you know, you're going to be able to find it in all the outlets, you know, like iTunes and Amazon and all that stuff. Of course, the Frontiers website. Really hope everybody takes a listen and just get ready for the video because, you know, what we did was we decided not to do like any band stuff with people bouncing around on stage. It's all like a series of images that have like sort of a cinematic narrative feel as this. The great evil of Alice Cooper enters the fray, and it's kind of wild. So I hope everybody enjoys it. It's coming out soon.
Well, honestly, Kane, I think that it's an amazing album, and I hope that everybody does, like you say, give it a chance because I think they'll be really pleasantly surprised. They should go pick it up and support your work.
Okay, all right, man. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Well, Kane Roberts, you're a great guitarist and a great singer, and we were totally happy to have you on. Thank you so much.
Okay, so long, man.
You called me last night, and I'm glad I didn't hear the phone ring, 'cause your voice still shuts me down. And just the thought of you still gets me where I can't do anything. And I know I was out of my league when I gave you everything. And falling down, I turn around and learn to walk away. This is my coronation. Thank you for your degradation.
My coronation. Thank you for your degradation.
never fade away. No matter how I pray, you never fade away. You never fade away.